The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, it's Gabe from Thinking Outside the Long Box, still at Denver Pop Culture Con, and right now I'm standing here talking with Andy Mangles. Andy, how are you doing?
Hey Gabe,
man?
Good to see you again.
So, I gotta know something before we get into the interview proper.
Okay.
You have to tell me about the Show Bears.
Show Bears, I'm in a singing group called the Broadway Bears, and every twice a year we do a concert, and we always pick a theme so that it we can know what songs to use and things like that. So, as you can imagine with Broadway Bears, most of what we sing is Broadway, but we also sing stuff from movies, TV shows, so forth. And so our theme this last concert was Show Bears, and it had a comic book connection, which a lot of people don't realize. You can look up the poster online at broadwaybears.org. And before I even knew what the concert was going to be, I had in my mind Show Bears, and I saw the poster for Showgirls, but with a naked hairy man instead of naked hairless woman.
Right.
But I was like, it's got to be the hairiest guy possible. Like, somebody with hair everywhere on their side. And Steven Sadowski, who used to be an artist on Justice Society for DC, and he drew John Carter Mars for Dynamite, he is that way, and he has that posed for a lot of art photos and so forth. So I called him up and I said, "Would you be Nomi for our Show Bears post?" Nomi was the character in Showgirls,
right?
I says, "Would you be Nomi for our Show Bears?"
I'm so sad that I actually know that, but yeah,
right. So Steven Sadowski, artist Steven Sadowski, that's him who's on our poster,
oh,
nude
amazing.
From the side, and then I was one of the singers in the show. And all our songs in that show were about being an actor, auditioning, Hollywood, being on stage, etc., and stuff from Chorus Line and Gypsy and things like that. And one of my solos was actually, it's a cabaret song. I came out as the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. And sang a song called "I'm Gonna Love This Play" about the show he's going to see that night at the theater that he knows he's going to love.
This is genuinely why I love talking to you, just so you know.
It's a lot of fun, so if you're in Portland, twice a year we do these shows. I'm eventually going to put them all up on YouTube pretty soon.
Right.
So if you look for my YouTube channel, which is Sci-Fi Bear. And for those of you who don't know what bears are, that's, I'm a bear. You're actually a bear too.
Yes.
So it's big guys, big hairy guys, bearded, hairy, bulky. So that's what it is.
Yeah, it's awesome.
If you don't know what a bear is, now you know.
Don't look it up on Unsafe Search if you're afraid.
Right.
Of that sort of thing.
It's not safe for work searches.
Yeah.
Generally.
Do it at home.
Right.
Maybe when you're a little drunk or curious.
Yeah, curious is good.
Yeah.
So that's Show Bears.
I saw it and I was listening to, because you have some of you singing on SoundCloud,
right.
And so I'm taking notes listening to you sing. It's phenomenal. I loved it so much. So talk to me a little bit about Retro Fan Magazine. Like, because this is...
So, you mean... Retro Fan Magazine.
Through the power of television.
Right, exactly. Retro Fan is a great magazine. Tomorrow's publishes it, and I've been writing for them pretty regularly with Back Issue, which is a magazine about 70s, 80s, and into the 90s comics.
Okay.
And does a lot of fairly in-depth articles about comic books from that time period and comic creators from that time period. Retro Fan is not just about comics. It's about comic books and lunch boxes and TV dinners and commercials and TV shows and, so forth. So it's really about things that inspire fandom. And that could be from the 40s or 50s or up to now. And so there's Saturday morning. There's been articles on Saturday Morning Serial, and there's been... a whole bunch of stuff like that. So I'm their regular Saturday morning columnist.
Okay.
Meaning that I cover shows that were traditionally on Saturday morning. So this issue, for instance, I did a cover story on Shazam. And today I just did two panels with Michael Gray and John Davey, who were on the cover here, as the original Billy Batson and Captain Marvel. And while I was on panel, I got a phone call, which I couldn't answer because I was on panel, that was from Dinah Girl, from Electra Woman and Dinah Girl,
nice.
Wanting to set, because I had called her to get an interview set up, and so it was calling to set up the interview. Dinah Girl's calling me while I'm interviewing the stars of Shazam.
That's awesome. What a
spirit. FML. So, fun my life. That's what that means. But you know, it's really strange, and you get a little bit of this, as you, I'm sure, as you do these podcasts, to be a fan, and then to in today's world where you have access to people, and you actually get to interview and get to know people that you see on TV and in movies and in comics. You know, when I was a kid, I never dreamed as a 10-year-old that I would be friends with Captain Marvel and Billy Batson and,
right.
and Wonder Woman. And, you know, it, like, you never dreamed that.
It's so interesting because over the years of doing this, I've had that opportunity so many times that it's just mind-blowing. Like, today I talked to Jim Beaver, who plays Bobby in Supernatural,
yeah.
which I've watched more hours of him than I've gone to my own children's plays. Like, you know, like, it's just such a really
He's
cool
probably
experience.
Better than your... I mean,
oh,
I'm,
for sure.
No,
for
I'm
sure.
not saying anything about your kids, but Jim Beaver's probably better. Now, did you know Jim Beaver is a fan himself?
Yes.
I mean, he's a super collector and historian in Hollywood himself. So, as much as you're into, like, what he's doing, he's into...
George Reeves.
You know, yeah exactly. So, it's kind of... It's cool that we have these times and we exist in a time where fans and pros and the people they look up to can interact.
Right.
It also means that you get people who misbehave, like what's happening with, you know, the Star Wars actresses, and basically any actresses are getting harassed by certain types of toxic fans, but there's also the people who are really supportive and really good, and hopefully they, for most people, they outshine the people who are not quite as cultured.
Right. So, you seem like the kind of guy that has a lot of personal obsessions like I do. Like, I'm obsessed with Muscleman and Conan the Barbarian and, like, all sorts of random...
You sound like you could be gay.
Yeah. I definitely am not straight. Let's right. start with that. So when you are looking at projects that you can do, how often do you just say, you know what, that's something that I'm completely obsessed with, I'm going to latch onto that and hold on to it now?
You mean in today's modern
yeah,
world
like
stuff?
As you're working on the magazines, do you just... Are you able to say, like, or
no.
like your Filmation book? Like,
yeah, no, not as much. There's an inherent thing that happens when you're 10. And most people, the things they fixate on are what they fixated on when they were 10. And that covers everything. That covers people with sexual fetishes. That covers people who are fan, like hardcore fans. Whatever they were into when they were 10 tends to be what they're into forever. So if that's video games, if that's comic books, if that's racing cars, if that's wrestlers, whatever, it's the period of time when your brain and your hormones and your body, everything is starting to change and shift. And whatever you become obsessed with at that point gives you comfort. And it's a weird thing to kind of like, there's been all these psychological reports about that. Like, why is it that people fixate right about then? And it's because that's a point where everything in your life is in flux and chaos, and it's about to get even more fluxy and chaosy. Puberty starts, and you're changing to high school, and you're, you know, it's like all these things happen. And whatever gives you comfort, Star Wars, or, you know, whatever it is, that's what becomes the core of, I'm going to stick with this.
Nice.
And it's why people react so badly when stuff, you know, Star Wars fans react so badly when something they feel dishonors what they had. It's why you get people who are arguing about Batman casting. You know, and we went through the exact same thing when Michael Keaton, when I was younger, and Michael Keaton was announced as Batman, and everyone starts freaking out. He's Mr. Mom. He's right. A comedian. You know, and they were freaking out. And now we get the same things happening with Robert Pattinson. And it has literally happened with every Batman actor since Adam West. And what that is not just... It's not just they can't remember that happened with the last guy who got Batman. It's they're messing with my Batman. And right. What they mean by that is the Batman who was Batman when I was 10 is my Batman. And it's a very strange cycle that we go through. But you'll see it through all this fandom stuff, you know.
Right.
And I guarantee that we're going to have people to whom Detective Pikachu is their Pikachu. And 10 years from now, if the world is still here, 10 years from now, when they revamp Pikachu, you'll get people who are angry because they've changed Pikachu and he's not like Detective Pikachu. And then you'll have the older people who are like, but he's not the cartoon Pikachu.
Right.
You know?
It's just like, it's like the old punk conversation where for this guy, Talking Heads is punk, and for this guy, like,
yeah.
The Black Flag is punk.
Right,
and
right,
for
right.
This guy, Rancid's punk.
Yeah, and you're wearing actually a Black Flag shirt, right?
It's a Black Flag motif wrestling shirt.
Right, so right, okay.
It's a lot of nerd packed into one shirt.
I love that. And that's a cool thing that's happening in fandom today. And you see it at the conventions. You see people in these nerdy shirts that are made for fans by fans.
Right.
And they're usually mixing metaphors, and they're mixing fandom elements together, and your shirt mixes two kinds of fandom together, you know, and this, like, the shirt I'm wearing today is like Wonder Woman through the ages,
right?
And some people are like, but Kathy Lee Crosby's on it, and other people are like, where's Linda Carter, and where's Gal Gadot, you know, it kind of depends on, are you a fan of the actor or actress? Are you a fan of the character? Are you a fan of punk? Are you a fan of the music?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of that band? You know, there's all sorts of different aspects that can happen with that. And, you know, get back to my plug, that's what, like, RetroFan... That's what, like, RetroFan is about. In some ways, is that it covers so many different types of fandom. So it's like, okay, I don't care about these other three articles, but these three articles are really interesting. You asked about my Filmation book. There we go. So creating the Filmation Generation, this book is all about Filmation Studios from the 1960s up through 1989 when they went out of business. But, you know, during that time period, they were responsible for bringing superhero cartoons, Superman, Batman, Aquaman, to television, and then the Archies and Fat Albert and He-Man and She-Ra and, you know, all these things that were a major part of a lot of people's childhood. But you look at He-Man and She-Ra and you say, that's the same people who did Fat Albert. Well, logically, people can make that leap, but you don't say Fat Albert was the same as He-Man or She-Ra.
Right.
Like you would say a DC Universe property.
Right.
You know, Filmation was a really diverse studio, so they could do Mighty Mouse, and they could do the Archies, and they could do Fat Albert, and they could do He-Man, all in the same animation studio. But fans are so used to stuff staying in its own lane.
Right.
You know, publishers stay in their own lane. You know, Marvel publishes Marvel comics, and the things that they publish that are kind of outside of it aren't as successful because it's not their lane. But I think part of that comes from people wanting that thing that comforted them.
Right.
And, you know, you get projects now that disrupt that. You get Heroes in Crisis and Kid Flash is a killer. And sorry, spoiler alert. you know, but you get these things that people have invested time and energy and fandom in. And you're disrupting that. Now, if there's a good storytelling reason, people will respect that. You know, Teen Titans is a great example. In the original Teen Titans, Terra turns out to be a traitor to the team. Well, that was something they built up and worked at over time. And people many people didn't like it, but they absolutely respected it. That's very different from saying, well, now you know, Sue Dibney is going to kill somebody by, you know, shrinking down and giving him a brain embolism, or Kid Flash is going to kill a bunch of people and frame somebody else for it.
Right.
You know, those are things that do not come out of storytelling or character. They came out of some editor deciding that they were going to make changes.
Right.
And that's when the fans get, you know, that's what happened with the Star Wars stuff, is that, you know, somebody decided, well, I'm going to do this. And the fans are like, wait, but that doesn't make sense in the story, and it doesn't make us happy as fans. You get creators who do things that make fans happy, and you're going to get a lot more success.
Do you think that's part of what makes, like, things like Stranger Things so successful, is because they have that, I loved this when I was 10, but it's also a new absolutely. And well-told story?
Absolutely. Stranger Things is, like, one of the most perfectly designed retro feel series I've ever seen on television. It is literally exactly what it needs to be. But part of that is they are in control of their own series. Nobody's telling them, you have to do this, you have to do that. There's this continuity, you know, etc. They're in control of it. They aren't bringing other people in to control their property. It's their story. But it is absolute. I mean, it's a perfect example of capturing nostalgia right. Can I plug something else here?
Absolutely, yeah.
I did this series, and we talked about this last year, the first issue, or 2 years ago. The first issue had just come out
right.
of Wonder Woman Meets the Bionic Woman. And this was an example like that, where everybody said, you captured exactly what I remember the television series being. You captured the characters' voices, their looks, the way they interacted. It felt like it was an actual 2-hour movie that we were watching on television. Right. Well, it's a 3-hour movie, but you know, and with a bigger budget, because they didn't have a huge budget, you know. But it was really something that, as a super fan of this, I went back to my 10-year-old self and I said, when I was 10 and I wanted these characters to team up, what did I want to see?
Right.
And then I stayed true to that, what I wanted to see. As a storyteller, I told a story that was more adult in scope, because I'm a better storyteller
than a 10-year-old.
At 52. Than I was as a 10-year-old.
I heard you say 30.
Yeah, yeah. That was... right. I was 10 a few years back. But it was something where I respected not just what I wanted to see, but what other fans wanted to see. And I respected the characters, I respected the actresses, and I respected the stories that had been told before. And that really, the fans respond to that. Second season of Star Trek Discovery is a good example of that, where they took the complaints they got about season one, and they really worked hard at changing those complaints while still moving forward with their story, bringing everything into line to where it needed to be, and it showed. And they got a better show out of it, and fans complained a lot less.
Right.
Because they were telling good stories in their own way, but they were still progressing the story forward, but they were not violating people's memories of what this should be or could be or had been.
Right. I still think I'm a bigger fan of Orville.
Orville's not a bad show. I'm watching it regularly. It brings a smile to my face. It makes me feel like I'm seeing new episodes of Star Trek Next Generation
Right. Most
of the time. You know, I really do feel like, okay, this is season 9 of Star Trek Next Generation.
Right.
But again, it's that type of thing where it brings that comfort of, this is familiar, but it's a new story.
Right.
And it's not something that feels like it's dishonoring the franchise. Even though it's not a Star Trek franchise, it's not dishonoring it. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to use the term that they used on South Park when they talked about the last Indiana Jones movies, about what they did to their childhood, because that's a shocking term. But that's creators in comics and film and Hollywood when they're working on franchises, need to realize that they can't screw with people's childhoods, because they're not going to get their respect, they're not going to get their dollars, they're not going to get another movie or TV show out of it.
Right.
They need to respect it and remember what it was like. What brought you to this project? It wasn't to do something new and to destroy it or blow it up. What brought you to this project was your memories of what how good it was.
When you were a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So as we're wrapping up, yeah. What can we look forward to and how can our fans find you?
Wow. I say wow because I'm not working on a lot right at the moment of anything that's coming out immediately. I am going to do another book on Filmation in the future that'll be... This first book was from the perspective of the head of Filmation and talking a lot about the behind-the-scenes business element of what went into Saturday morning animation. So the next book is going to be more the nuts and bolts. It'll be episode guides and stories from the animators and the writers and things like that. So between the two books, you'll get a complete look at a big chunk of television animation history. That I'm working on. My literal next book is about as narrow casting as you can get, but nobody's ever written about it. It's the first of what's probably going to end up being 7 books about the media of Stephen King. Huh. And people have written books about his movies and about his TV shows and so forth. But my book, which is the first out of these books, will be about the theater of Stephen King. And people are like, what theater of Stephen King? All I know about is Carrie the Musical. And I'm like, yes, there's Carrie the Musical, but there's also The Shining the Opera. And and there is The Shining the Parody. Then there is, you know, I mean, literally, Eyes of the Dragon was a play in the Netherlands.
Really?
And Misery has been adapted twice for different theatrical plays and played on Broadway. And Dolores Claiborne was a play in Israel. And, you know, I mean, it's like all this stuff. Stephen King has been adapted almost as much in stage as he has in film or television.
But people
don't know about it. And theater is a medium that is immediate. And if you don't see it while it's there, it's gone.
Yeah.
So writing about the history of something that is that immediate... for something that's that well known is a real challenge. And so my book is going to be a really in-depth guide to all these various things and how they came about. And then should I get to write the other books, there will be 2 books on the films of Stephen King, 2 books on the television series of Stephen King, and then the final books will be about the Dollar Babies, which are the movies he sells. He lets student films do it for a dollar, but then they can never be shown outside of one film festival. And then probably one on the comics of Stephen King.
Oh, that's
so
super
yeah.
Cool.
So it'll be like by the end of it, it'll be this bookshelf of books about that, because I'm fascinated by how people are approaching adapting the work of a person who is probably the most popular writer of the 20th and 21st century.
Period.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And just so we don't forget, how can our listeners find you and find out more?
Right. So my name is Andy Mangels, which is Mangels is spelled M-A-N-G-E-L-S, which is like angels with an M in front of it. My website is andymangels.com. So it's like super easy to find me if you spell my name right.
And if you don't, it's impossible.
If you mangle my name, yes, I've heard that joke before.
I didn't say it.
Then you won't find your way to me. You'll find your way to some Russian porn site. I hope not. But, you know,
you never know,
if it's a good Russian porn site, I wouldn't care. But, you know, I don't want them to go to a bad one. But, andymangles.com. You can always find my stuff there. If you want to find my cool Broadway shows, that's broadwaybears.org. Broadwaybears.org. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Andy, thank you so much for
thank
your time.
Thank you.
It's always
long
a pleasure.
Box people. Sorry I talked for so long.
No.
Like I'm like a wind up toy.
That's why I love
getting wound up.
That's why I asked Juan to come talk to you, because I know you always are gonna
he's
have
He's asleep.
Some...
He's like
oh no, he's running the camera. Hi camera.
All right, thank you, long box guys.
Thank you so
All
much.
Right, man.
Appreciate it.
We'll see you later.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.